up, brother? Okay. Yeah, you on. We hear you. We hear you on the radio. We hear you coming through the stream.
Yeah.
Very good.
But what's going on my end is my computer screen and my computer's acting funny, and it doesn't appear that I'm broadcasting. I can't see anything. I can't, you know, some of you have texted me to let me know that I'm coming through, and I thank you for that, you know, Brother Ralph, Brother Kwaku, let me know that I, you know,
hey,
but I'm
brother,
not
Brother Ocean, you hear me now?
Is this Wes?
So how we got blocked, it's a storm, you know, that storm. Bro.
Yeah, that could be like, it. That could be it. And I'm like, totally.
Yeah, soon we talking some good stuff, some good serious stuff. You know how the devil works, man.
But they can't
stop the truth.
Oh, no. That'll never happen. That'll never happen because there's other means and methods. I mean, hey, if Marcus Garvey could do what he did back in the days when even telephone was not readily available, we know what can be done. So.
Yes, sir. So the point I was trying to make, man. These coons sold us out, man. John Lewis, particularly him, man. All that stuff he went through with the dog on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, getting busted in the head by the police.
Mm-hmm.
He voted for this. And Hank Johnson, he voted for this. He took Cynthia McKinley's seat. And this coon, David Scott, man, I know he's crooked. I can look at him and tell when he talk, when he moved his mouth, he lying, man. Okay? So they think they think we sleep, man. Okay.
Yeah.
See, now the days whatever they vote, we can see it almost real time if you go to C-SPAN. And these Negroes got to go, man. So they about to sell us back in slavery, Miss Ocean. They about to turn us back in. They about to vote put slavery back on the book, man. Damn near.
Well, of course that's not going to happen. But you're going to be seeing more repressive and oppressive measures being taken. I think that's why it's important for us to understand that, yeah, I agree with challenging those individuals from a voting standpoint, legislative standpoint, but my feeling is that we have to prepare ourselves to get out of this madness. There is no way possible that we can coexist with Europeans whose very design and desire is to eliminate us. To subjugate us.
I think the first thing we need to do is separate ourselves from these coons, man. Okay? Like these coons up the Congressional Black Caucus, man. Okay?
Well,
only three of them that voted correct, voted no, was our sister Maxine Waters. She voted no. And our brother, Al C. Hastings down there in Florida. And Miss Frederica Wilson with the cowboy hat. Because she was with that soldier that got killed, black guy,
that got killed in Niger.
In Niger.
I don't know why they keep saying Niger. See, they always, you know, but yeah, I know what you mean. I know who you mean. So, even at that, because there's other legislative measures and means that have been coming down that Donald Trump is doing that are going to be equally as tough on us as a people. You know, everything that has been happening. And the irony is just recently, you know what he did, right? Trump pardoned. Trump pardoned Jack Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And when he did that, when I seen it on the crawl, I instantly became very angry with Barack Obama.
That's why he did that, man.
Because Barack Obama. Yeah. Because Barack Obama should have pardoned Jack Johnson. He should have pardoned Marcus Garvey. I understand that from a political standpoint, even though he was on his way out, he wasn't going to touch Assata Shakur or Mamiya Abdul-Jamal and probably other political prisoners, Sandy Adekola and many others, Leonard Peltier. I understand that because that's weak. I mean, I understand it from a standpoint of being weak. Which Obama was,
right?
But
see, I look at Obama and Nelson Mandela the same way. They wasn't nothing but just symbols of a fake illusionist move where they could say we made it. You know what I mean? And so Obama did what he had to do. Know why? Because he didn't want to end up like JFK, two to the dome. Okay.
Well, I mean, I understand
he had
that.
To play that game.
Yeah,
huh?
I understand that. I understand what you're up against. But to me, if you really want to have some legitimacy, particularly well amongst us as a people, I know there's a lot of us. But I think I venture to say the majority of us, particularly even more so, Wes, because of Trump. even more so because of Trump, are more enamored and in love with Obama. You know,
right. but see, with Trump, he's doing the same thing too, because he done met with two or three times with Henry Kissinger and to run just keep this play going and keep the empire going, man. It's all a game, brother Oshie.
Oh,
that's all it is, man.
No,
and see,
no,
Trump,
no. You know what it is, Wes? What it is this, dear brother. Every president and every entity within the government is designed to help maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have made for themselves. So it doesn't matter who the president is, male or female, or whatever ethnicity the president is. The president of the United States of America is the figurehead of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, or has so many people term it rights.
Man.
Exactly. So that's the bottom line.
One more thing on 45 Trump. If he lowered the price on these prescriptions,
hold up. I'm sorry, Wes. Go ahead.
Yeah, Trump lowered the price on these prescription medications, and so people can get their medication, even though it's sometimes harmful. You might as well say he back in there, man.
Well, I don't think he's in anything or going anywhere. The bottom line is he is who he is, you know, and who he is an idiot, a narcissistic fool who is surrounded by some very mean-spirited individuals. And they're doing what they're doing on a constant basis. But hold on with me, Wes. I'm going to play this piece on the Memorial Day celebration and its history, proving once again. Hold on.
Right.
Hold on. Let me try to give a few mutes for the people here so I can do this.
All right.
I apologize. All right. Let's do this.
Guess what? The Memorial Day celebrated today has pretty much erased the contributions of African Americans. But why are we surprised? First known as Decoration Day, Memorial Day became a national holiday in 1971. But Memorial Day's traditions actually date back to the days of the Civil War. John Logan, a Union Army general, typically gets credit for founding the holiday. Here's how it really went down. The year was 1865. The Civil War was raging, and Charleston, South Carolina was a hot mess. White people were like, "We out." But thousands of black people, many former slaves, remained. At the time, many Union soldiers were being held prisoner in a converted racecourse. At least 257 of the captives died because of the horrific conditions, and their bodies were discarded in a mass grave. Ultimately, the Union won, and a few weeks after, the Confederacy surrendered, and they packed up and left Charleston. A group of black workmen dug up the bodies, then reburied them to properly honor the fallen. They built a fence around this makeshift cemetery with a sign over the entrance saying, "Martyrs of the Racecourse." I spoke with Professor David Blight, an American historian and scholar who's credited with bringing this story to light.
They held a huge parade, and it was about 10,000 people led by black children carrying armloads of all kinds of flowers. They paraded around the racetrack, and then they gathered as many as could fit into the cemetery compound. About three or four black preachers read from scripture, a children's choir sang, and they sang America the Beautiful, if you can believe it.
But still, hardly anyone knows about it.
On May 1st, 1865, is in effect the first original performance of Memorial Day, but it was created by African Americans.
Why have black people been omitted from a critical part of this holiday's history? I've got an idea. Racism.
The white South was able to control first its own narrative and then a good deal of the national narrative.
Despite efforts to forget the contributions of African Americans, we remember. And just as we remember all of our fallen soldiers, we must also not forget the black workmen whose noble actions became the catalyst for the holiday that we recognize today.
What's up? I'm PJ with The Root. We want to bring you more series and videos like this. And we need your help. Let us know what you thought below and subscribe to our channel on YouTube.
All right. There you go. So now you know. So if you didn't know before, now you know. and I mentioned this, like I said, the last few years, that memorial. And really, I mentioned in the sense that, so what? I don't mean to say it like that. You know, it's just like all the other things that Caucasians co-opt. And they shape it and fashion it in their image and in their interests. And even though historically they may not be true, but to Caucasians they are true, because why? They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that everything that they do is superior. In fact, if somebody did something and it was good, then they'll co-opt that and make it look like they did it. You know, it's like everything else, you know. So even though we did that in honor of all those dead bodies, which were built, buried in a mass grave, and we dug them up and gave them a proper burial, you know, and then later some Caucasian general comes along and takes it, and then now the federal government gets involved. And I mean, it's just like the lottery. We used to do that. Yes, we were the number runners. Just like bootleg, and we had some of the probably the best bootleg whiskey and so forth there was. Government took that over, you know. So anyway, enjoy the day. Enjoy the day. We got a caller, 267. 267, good morning. We got a caller, 267.
Yeah, good morning, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Ralph, how are you? Thanks a lot, Ralph, for let me know what was happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you was coming. We heard everything that was going on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Just couldn't get nothing through the conference.
Right. I couldn't see it on screen. You know, my screen went.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, that was kind of shaky, because I'm like, am I being heard? And the thing that I streamed through, you know, called broadcast, that was acting funny. It was stopping and so forth. So I don't know. I was like, man, what's going on here? You know? And so.
But I just wanted to call you, man, and say thanks for staying on post, man, even though this is one of those holidays or holidays, as some people call them. You know, they said this is when our forefathers, when, you know, they were happy to see it come because they got rest. And that's what I'm doing today. Right. I'm getting me some rest, brother.
Right on. You deserve it, man.
Yeah. So I'm getting me some rest. You know what I mean? Just staying in the house and just chilling.
Yeah.
But but Elliot's program last night, it was centered around, I don't know if you caught the gist of it, but it's letting you know something that I've been trying to tell our folks. And I hear Brother Marcus when he comes on, and I hear a lot of these brothers when they come on. They always trying to quote Marcus Garvey. But if you really heard something Marcus Garvey said, and I'm going to say this again, he said, it is not my desire to take all Negroes back to Africa. There are some Negroes that are no good here, and they'll be no good over there.
Yeah, I
so,
agree.
You know,
I
if
agree.
We can really get some acceptance with that, mm-hmm. we can go on ahead and push forward and do what we want to do, like sovereignty.
Yeah.
But we have to get that concept first, Brother Oshie. We can't save everybody.
No, we can't.
There are some out. Right. Now, let me tell you about the guy that Elliot and them were talking about last night. Now, I missed the program, but it was on this clown comes on. He's one of my state senators. And he comes on for about 15, 20 minutes, and he calls this terrestrial radio station every Saturday and takes up about 20 minutes about what the Democratic Party is going to do for the voters and this, that, and the other, and why we got to keep Donald Trump out. This is his whole spew every Saturday when he comes in. So see these black politicians think we're stupid,
right?
So they can use Donald Trump, but at the same token, they're stabbing us in the back with these sanctuary cities. Our young men and our women are getting beat up, dragged out of Waffle Houses. We're the sanctuary for them,
right?
You know, but they got sanctuary cities for illegal immigrants, people that they you know mm-hmm. they said they need. So that shows you how devastating that party is to us. But this is the point, Brother Oshie. Now, we saw, I sent the list out to Elliot and a few others, where his name was on that list where he signed that Blue Lives Matter bill. And every time a brother gets frisked, beat up, stomped, you know, in Philadelphia, you don't hear this clown. But he signed his name to this Blue Lives Matter bill. So one of your callers called the station and said, can you ask him why did he sign that Blue Lives Matter bill?
Mm-hmm.
So the host said, well, you know, we had a caller. Because the host, wait a minute, the host was inviting you every Saturday. The host didn't even know about it.
Okay.
The host said, wait a minute, we had a caller saying, why did you vote for this Blue Lives Matter bill? He said, Blue Lives Matter, I don't know what that means. So the other host, who's a real coon, she says, that means cops, police. I mean, why did you sign a bill for cops and police? And he said, I'm going to have to research that. It's not to my recollection. That bill was just signed. Yeah. And he said, my thing is, I'm going to go out to the communities. I'm going to kiss babies and enjoy barbecue. I ain't got time for that. So he's letting you know he thinks our people are stupid.
Stupid, yeah.
That continuously vote this clown in. So, you know, that's what his program was all about last night. And Elliot got the recording of that program. And, man, it's just that our people got to wake up and find out these politicians mean us no good. Like Malcolm said, because we love quoting Malcolm.
Right.
But he said their wings are the same bird.
Exactly.
They keep capitalism afloat.
Right? Exactly.
You know, so come on, man. So that's my way to get on the sovereignty, is to dispel all these myths that we believe in and be a free thinker. Don't be scared to leave Santa Claus and the bunny rabbit and all that stuff behind, man. Come on, we got to grow up as a people. So, you know, I just had to call and say thank you for coming on today where we can have real conversation.
I appreciate it.
You know
brother.
What I mean?
Believe me.
Thank you for that.
Thanks. Thanks, Brother Ralph.
All
thanks
right,
for
brother.
Always listening. Thanks for always listening, always contributing, man. Appreciate you. In fact, you are the reason I'm on this radio station. So, you know, I got to give you some love. All right. 646.
Hey, Oshie, man. I really was hoping that you would put me on with your brother, Wes, because I really got to find out from Wes, when is he going to have a personal visitation with that Sambo cold beat upside the head John Lewis. I think he needs to set up a meeting with him as maybe one of his constituents to find out why is this worthless old Negro constantly putting the foot in the behind of African people for his daddy.
Man, hey Wes, did you hear that? Hey, Wes.
Yeah, it's time.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you, man.
Okay.
I really feel you need to set up a meeting with him as one of his constituents and sit out and give him a litany of, you know, deeds that he has done against the interests of black folks and let him know that enough is enough, that it may be time for him to go take a seat and give it all up, because it seemed like he was becoming the head of selling out black folks. You know what I mean?
Well, look here, man. Hey. Look here, man.
Brother, with the research that could put it into this.
Yes, sir. But look here, man. See, I tried to talk to Hank Johnson, right? And he told me, look, I'm not in his district. He ain't got nothing to say to me, man. Okay? That's what Hank Johnson told me a couple of years ago. I got gerrymandered out of his district. It was Cynthia McKinney's district. But Hank Johnson specifically told me in a text, well, I'm not in his district. So if I do run into John Lewis, he might tell me the same thing, but it's all good, man. I'm going to try to talk to him if I run into him.
And
they
me,
always have meetings and stuff at the Union Hall. At the IBEW.
And
so
to me,
if I run into him, say what, Brother Ocean?
No, to me, Brother Wes and Brother Jay, it doesn't matter whose district you're in.
Yes, sir.
Especially congressional. And because those individuals are in Congress, and they're supposed to represent not just their district constituency, but as far as I'm concerned, if you're an American African and you're in Congress, you're representing African people, American African people. And you should be able to be contacted and discuss the issues that are affecting our people, because maybe they're unaware, but a lot of them don't want to be aware,
right?
You know, because a lot of them, they get into Congress and then they play my back, I scratch your back, you scratch mine, quick pro quo. And so therefore they begin to stay in office year after year, decade after decade. Some of them been in there, man, 30, 40 years. It's ridiculous. And there is no succession plan. They don't groom young people to take over and to take it to another level. All they do is play partisan politics, or has somebody said, plantation politics. We get nothing.
Well, in my district, Charlie Rangel was a congressman for over 40 years, and he didn't groom nobody at all.
Exactly.
His seat was taken by Baba Louie. Harry, did you go from a black man to a Baba Louie? What's next? A transgender freak? You know what I mean? An LGBT freak or whatever you want to refer to the degenerate side? That's the way we go. Harry, did you have a point now in our sphere in this country where the LGBT freaks and the Baba Louies got more power and say-so in the direction of the country that black folks do, and we the ones who built it? Something's fundamentally wrong with that.
Yeah, I hear you. No, you're right.
Fundamentally wrong with that. I don't know what our problem is. And the thing is, you got clowns like this Lewis and some of the others that will back the agenda of the Baba Louie and the transgender freaks, then they will lay all people. That's just a fact. And we're not saying nothing about it. All we're doing is trying to get along.
Yeah.
For what?
That's what we
you
do.
You know, I mean, at some point in time, don't your people priority have to be the most important thing? Because your people priority is just going to lead to their surviving? The conditions that are not getting better but are getting worse? What the hell is wrong with these people? And the problem really is, why don't black folks understand this, and why don't black folks stand up against it? So you saying that you just going along with your genocide. For what reason? Do you understand that you are facing genocide? Mm. Do black people understand that? No. Black people don't understand that they're facing genocide. They think everything must be all right. That's what I'm at the point now that we need to figure out. We need to put together a think tank, honestly, to find out what is mentally wrong with black folks.
we know what's mentally wrong with black folks, Jay. We know what's wrong with African people on the continent and globally. European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. That's what's wrong. They have messed up our minds. And it's on the continent, and it's throughout the diaspora. Everywhere we are. Everywhere. It defies all laws of probability. Europeans are Caucasian. Huh?
But you know something, Oshie? Let me ask you this, because what I was really calling was to have a nice little laugh with Wes, and also to find out, because you didn't really speak about it yet, what was the deal with the conference this weekend?
I'm going to go into that. I'm going to go into that. Yep. And I hope I can get some people to call in that were at the conference after I come back from the break. After I come back to break, we're going to talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement.
Let me say this.
Yes.
Let me say this. I will definitely be listening. But, you know, in all seriousness, we got to figure out how we're going to be able from this point forward to get our people to start thinking about sovereignty and stop thinking about all this integration and all this other nonsense that we're trying to get ourselves, as I would say, addicted to. Because, like Wes was saying, no, I think Red, the other brother, Ralph, was saying about that Philadelphia radio host. Now, I don't know if you heard the program last night.
I heard bits and pieces of it. I didn't hear it in its entirety. I just, as Ralph explained it to me, I did hear a few things. So I did hear Wes last night talking about the Blue Lives Matter piece that was brought up and congresspersons voted for it. And in light of bringing this to some legislation when we are being killed in the streets by the police who are supposed to be.
I would say, do these people read these bills? or is it just their staff members that read the bills, and, you know, based on who and what they are, classic Negro peas who get along to go along, or, you know, they just tell them, well, yeah, you should vote for or not. You know what I mean? Because the reality is, Elliot played the clip in regards to what Bobby Rush said years ago.
Yes, I heard that.
That signing the car bill was the worst thing in the world that he ever did.
Right,
so
I heard that.
So if that's the case, how did the Negro bought the inside Blue Lives Matter bill? That's what I want to understand, because the Blue Lives Matter bill is just a continuation of the car bill.
Right.
On another level. And here it is, nobody says anything about it. I mean, you know, I'm trying to figure out, what are we going to be able to do to wake these caucus members up? Because the response from what I've heard from another one of them are, who justify the bill, is that now your rubles are going to be charged also. Do you understand that madness?
Yeah, yeah. No,
do you understand that?
No.
Do you really understand that madness?
No.
And we don't have nothing in place to challenge that twisted and logic. But listen, Ochi, I'm going to go, but I will be listening to the program to definitely hear about Saturday. And if I have any questions, I'll call back in. And Wes, you have a good day, my brother.
All right. All right, Brother Wes and Brother Jay and all the brothers who call and sisters who call, appreciate y'all nonetheless, and all those who are listening here on African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I appreciate all of those who continue to do so. We're going to talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement after we come back from this break. You're listening to African Perspectives. Stay right here with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
My name is Professor X the Overseer, and what you're about to witness is the messenger group X-Clan. Here's the nine. The movement Black Watch. And when we're not outraged about the oppression upon the black existence, we step to you in blackness. By the way,
exist in a state of vainglorious as we are protected by the red, the black, and the green. Heed the words of the brother, Sissy.
Let us the words, word to phrase, to paragraph. Heed math as Jay begins class. Science of past is now brought to the rhyme fix. From the scroll, state to the verse. God to God, so God's to man. Many kings, many leaders, a fist from a hand. They call me militant, now what does this mean? Do I carry a gun to leave the army scene? Put the cause and never pause, as simply as the brother. Raise the flag, wave the colors. Red, black, green with the key, the difference. Words make a way in the world in an instant. Living to die and I die to live again. 360 degrees. Comprehend, a man getting stronger till he's man no longer. Unearthly state makes the time seem shorter. The ever radiant awareness, born forth the one. Open nine stroke sun. Practicing priests, standing by what I teach. So you all stand starving as I start to release. Words of love. Brought from the Genesis, will exist till Armageddon is a witness. The originals built the earth. One must it be aggression to learn a basic lesson? Quite majestic, stern within reality. A juggernaut when you tamper with mentality. However, crown, extension and dimension of a brain cell, bringing hell to the sellouts. The ever tangled web we weave, always trying to obtain, no attempt to achieve. Defenders of kings and queens act like justice, never potential, caught up in the measure. Jealousy of what are we? Becomes tendency for their thievery. Alright, cool, but no need to pull a
talkers as a fool. I get my words like that in my school to produce the words that they fool about. It's another way of taking out these sissies who may try to extinct my principality. But of course not having me madness. From beginning, I'm the end. Observe me. Ignorance is not a trend. So as I beckon for a few seconds, pull the reins and give the words of the brother. One with the universe, mastering words on the verse. Funk is a force I chose. Egyptian, African, now I'm on a black watch. Check my sundial, synchronize a clock. I can catch a shadow as the moon reflects the sun. Creator's eyes make a path of other one. So now I walk softly and carry a big stick, a bird stick, so you natives from the lick. Jay brings the funk and spreads jam to the wheat bread. And the funk of this one vanglorious, unearthly resistance, strong with persistence, grand verbal allocations, tribal connection, pyramids, witness the funk bearer, vibe sharer, not the era. Brother is balanced like the scales of Thor. And even my demand makes stones seem soft. Corrupts all systems, positive poison of me. Some call it onk, it's a key. Black is a color while blackness state of a mind state. But how many of you fake? Today, Brother J can find a better way, so be it. Plan it down and make it stay, I serve a purpose. Yet I'm not the G.I. Joe, I am the brother. Yo, I can never swear a person. Just hear me a step to the mic and stage area. As I drop the science that breaks the clock barrier. Words of old make me more than a beginner. The key opens knowledge and places in the tenor. Americana man, Africana brother. Don't forget the land, cause the birth is from the mother. A vibe is in place, obtained and discovered. Tune in your audio and hear the words of brother.
Yo, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, step off.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And, of course, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Also on Mondays on Time for an Awakening Media, we got Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Then right after that is Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 p.m. to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 p.m. to 10, again, is Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness with her program, Revive. Then on Friday from 8 p.m. until it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, and then Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And no, it is not me. It is Sister POC with her program, Revive, from 11 to 1. And then 7 p.m. on Sundays until it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard. And, of course, the call-in number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. This past weekend, I was in Washington, D.C. with my good brother, Baba Kambizi, with Us Lifting Us, and we proposed to the planning committee, the regional initiating committee of North America for the Pan-African Federalist Movement, that we initiate within that movement the cooperative economic model, the collective model that we, as members of Us Lifting Us, are promoting. And of course, we have our cafe, which of course tomorrow, if you are a coffee drinker, even if you're not a coffee drinker, just go to one of the American African owned and operated cafes and buy a sandwich, have a cup of tea, chai, whatever, espresso, you name it, latte, mocha, whatever, cup of coffee. Because I know at Cafe Ulu, we specialize in coffee. We got Cameroonian, we got Kenyan, we got Tanzanian, we got Ethiopian, we got Brazilian, we got Panamanian, we got coffee. And we also have some excellent loose teas from another brother who does this thing in Atlanta. And, of course, the ambrosia drink, which is simply delicious. And that brother and his effort. So everything at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. And I'm hoping that wherever you are, whatever city you are, and who are listening tomorrow, because Starbucks will not be open tomorrow across the country, that you patronize a cafe or a coffee house or whatever that is owned and operated by us. And hopefully you make it a favorite. Hopefully you'll come back again and again. But go back to the conference, and the conference was, I tell you, we had some good dialogue going back and forth at the conference. And of course, for me, as a Pan-Africanist and a sovereigntist, I want to make sure that sovereignty is the ultimate challenge, the ultimate goal of this endeavor, of this initiation. And I was assured of that, and I'm definitely going to be working with it to help bring it about. And also, too, I like to see young people involved. Initially didn't see too many young people, but the young people that were there, and I'm talking, when I talk about young people, because I guess because I'm old, so young people are in their, you know, mid to late 20s, 30s, and 40s. Those, to me, are young people. And I'm quite sure for them, especially if you're a teenager or in their 20s and you see somebody like me, I'm old. That's how they look at you, old, you know. But we're going to talk to one of the young brothers. I was very impressed with this young man. In fact, all three of the people who took notes and then gave a brief synopsis of what was discussed in the three plenary workshops that we had, all three of them, I was deeply impressed with. Well, the one is a sister who I know, Sister Asmira H, and she's just a beautifully and dynamic sister. She's been to many places. In fact, she's done a lot of work in Europe, you know, and she speaks fluent German and so forth. So she's very attuned to the Africans who are in Europe. And I just seen a piece on that, what's happening with Africans who are in Europe, you know. What's happening with them. And, of course, everywhere we are, and if we're there and Caucasians are there, we're getting dogged out. How about that? I mean, there is no place on this planet until we make it. And the only place that we can make it is on the continent that is ours, from whence we have come from where our ancestors are. That's the only place that we can be sovereign. And that's why I'm continuing to push this Pan-African agenda. So I'd like to bring to the conversation Brother Sam Collins, a young man I was seriously impressed with, and we're going to find out from Sam what he's involved in the D.C. area and his involvement with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Brother Sam Collins, are you there?
I'm here. Brother Oshi, I just want to give my thanks to you and the other elders in the room on Saturday for your support and for your belief in the young people and just your confidence that, you know, this movement for Pan-African unification and sovereignty will live on, because it's an eternal fight. It's a fight that's passed down through our ancestral lineage, and it's one that we can't give up despite what the naysayers might say, you know, because in my book, the naysayers don't exist. Only the mission does. So I just want to thank you for that.
Ashe, I appreciate that, and you're right. And because there's going to be a lot of them. Many of them are in politics who constantly advocate voting like that is a panacea for us.
Right.
They're in partisan politics. They're in the religion. They're particularly in Christianity that believes that somehow, some way that we can use moral persuasion on a people who have no morals, who will finally somehow wake up and have a damn epiphany and say, oh, gosh, I'm just so sorry of how I treated you and what I've done to you, taking your name, your language, your culture, and everything like that. Oh, I'm just, hell, that is not going to happen. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening, and it ain't going to happen. You know, so to me, the only solution for us as African people is to come together and reclaim our Africanness. You know, I think one of the things I was trying to get across at the conference is our language. You know, we're African people, you know, and I know there's a lot of us who don't want to be African. And that's on them. Just like one of my callers earlier said that can't all of us be saved? And you're right. And I don't look towards the multitude. I want individuals and groups of us who have the mission and have the will to make it come into fruition. That's what I want. You know,
and if they don't initially, they should at least be open to learning and open to deepening their African consciousness, you know, because a lot of us weren't where we are right now. You know, it took some situations to get us there. And I am not, you know, against anybody learning, but those who want to deny that there's a problem, we should just do away with them. And, you know, the All Eyes on DC movement in reference to what I do as a grassroots journalist and educator is designed pretty much to provide a platform for the brothers and sisters of all generations who are doing things to pretty much further our struggle for African liberation and unification, and to pretty much allow them to speak about what they're doing in their industries. And this All Eyes on DC platform, which includes a live news segment at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe, online news and videos, as well as a writing workshop, the All Eyes on DC movement is designed pretty much to give us a voice. It moves in the spirit of journalistic self-determination, us controlling our voice, us propagandizing our struggle, us controlling the narrative about what it is that we're going through, what it is that we've done as a people, and what it is that we can do. So for those of y'all who live in the D.C. area or find yourself here very often, every third Friday at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe, 2714 Georgia Avenue Northwest, between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., you can learn about issues specific to the African race in Washington, D.C., nationally and abroad when we bring on guests. This upcoming segment on June 15th, we're going to have two panels, a panel of musicians from yesteryear who are still doing their thing, of course, and musicians of the new year. So those who just came up in the last 10 years or so, young people around my age. And we're going to talk about pretty much, you know, the power of music, right? And how the vibration of that music, regardless of the genre that Black people find themselves in, pretty much moves listeners to do whatever it is that the musicians want them to do, whether they're shaking their rump or shaking Babylon down, okay? And the segment that we had before that in May touched on Black love. Before that, we touched on zoning laws and how zoning laws were used to steal land from Black families and give it to more well-to-do out-of-towners who come in and siphon off the culture of Washington, D.C., which is called a chocolate city.
Well, it once was called a chocolate city. I don't know if the numbers out.
Not more. We're hanging on by a thread. From what I recall, the African population in D.C. is at a 45%. You know, a lot of the majority Black neighborhoods have been just dismantled pretty much. So all that you have left of them are signs of what was. You know, this is what they do, right? They see culture, they come in, they siphon off it, they make everything, you know, so-called new, pristine, uniform, so that there's no sign of culture, but you see signs, what they do is they institutionalize the culture, right? Mm-hmm. So they make a go-go music day, or they make it a Chuck Brown day, named after the go-go musician.
Right.
But there's no organic sign of life that shows you what go-go was, or there's no organic life. If Black people, African people, right, if they were to play their music on the corner or talk amongst themselves in their neighborhood to hold a festival, their white neighbors would call the police on them. But these are the same white people that want to institutionalize the culture that they saw when they got here. Right. And make it seem as though that Washington, D.C. is a cultural hotbed, when in fact it's just turning into what they wanted all along.
Right. Right. I know gentrification is happening across this country. I never forget when I first heard that word and about 20-some years ago on a Sunday morning, CBS Sunday morning program, and they talked about Cincinnati, what the Cincinnati was going through with gentrification. And then I saw it from in Milwaukee, the same thing. And then, of course, here in Atlanta where I live now, same thing. You know, in fact, one of the Babas who attended the conference, he said, in the gentrification, how it works, first they send in the homosexuals. They send in the Caucasian homosexuals. And then once they're in, then they send in individual Caucasians or couples. And then once they get a good stranglehold of that community, then they send in the families. And they know that it's safe to send in the little children and so forth. And then, bam, that whole community begins to change over. And I witnessed gentrification happening in D.C. My friend lived on U Street when he was going to, back in the late 70s, early 80s. He was going to Howard Law School. He got a degree at Howard Law School. My good friend went on to be with the ancestors over 10 years ago, missing dearly, but I seen that happening. He was pointing some things out to me in those row houses, how some of them looked very nice because they had been gentrified, and people who, when they got it for little or no money, had the kind of wealth that they could make it look the way they wanted it to look, you know, repair it to the extent that they could repair it, you know.
And increase the property values, increase the property tax, you know, the city. And the thing about it, you know, going back to what we said about people who aren't comfortable in their Afrocentricity, we had African lawmakers bringing in gentrification after Marion Barry was disposed and the federal government, because you have to understand, the federal government wanted its hands on D.C. D.C. only got its own government. It's been 40 years now, and Marion Barry led that movement. So when Marion Barry left, they brought in Anthony Williams. He was a comptroller, right? This is when the U.S. Congress had control of D.C. Mm-hmm. and its finances. So Anthony Williams, forgive me, laid the groundwork for gentrification. Then you had Adrian Fenty. He brought it up some more, right? Then Vince Gray.
What happened to Sharon Dixon? Was the name Sharon Dixon? No.
Sharon Pratt Kelly?
Kelly Pratt Dixon, was that it?
Yeah, Pratt Kelly. That was like Walter Washington and them times. But gentrification in D.C., the groundwork was laid more so in the late 90s in the wake of the scandals involving Marion Barry. And just
right.
because Marion Barry was a strong figure in D.C., you know, in terms of supplying government jobs to African people, supplying summer employment to young African people, pretty much. They wanted to get them out of the way. There was always this confrontation between the indigenous D.C. and the D.C. that out-of-towners only know about, the White House, Congress, federal government, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Then once they got them out of the way and they got an out-of-towner named Anthony Williams, that's when the whole process started. That was in the late 90s, early 2000s, from what I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really got underway with the construction of the National Stadium when they brought baseball back to D.C. because white people, they love baseball, you know. So once they brought that back in there, that it was a wrap.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what's been happening. In fact, one of the Bibles said there are certain areas of D.C. that he doesn't even recognize anymore because of the physical change that has taken place. And like you said, you're saying we holding on at 45. I remember when D.C. was 75% us, and the only Caucasians were on the hill. But it was also too interesting to me back in the day when I did travel to D.C. how interesting it was to see the kind of poverty right in the shadow of the opulence, right in the shadow of the White House, the Capitol building, and so forth, Capitol Hill. And the fact that where the hill begins, there was no crime. There was no filth. There was no dirt. There was nothing going on. There were no drug dealing. There were no prostitution. All of that was like the hill. And then on the outside of that, all the things that were happening, you know.
Exactly.
Thought that was kind of interesting, you know. But, I mean, the reality is this. They're going to do what they're going to do. And we, as African people, cannot be upset because it's their thing. They shaped and fashioned this in their image and interest. The problem, of course, is it is detrimental to us. It has deleterious effects on our well-being, on our mental psyche, on our soul, you know. And so what we have to do is, just like that movie, get out. We got to get out, you know, because this whole program is designed to destroy African people, ultimately, is to minimize us. If you look at what they're doing and what they have been doing over the years, and one of my favorite people in our history, aside from Dr. John Henry Clark, is Dr. Bobby Wright. And Dr. Bobby Wright's outstanding essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, should be read by all of us and understood, you know, because this is, we just like Sister Soldier said, we are at war for the minds of our people. We are at war for the minds of our people. And this program here is dedicated to helping to reclaim the African mind. You know, that's why I do this every other day, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm committed, dedicated. It is my contribution to the independence, self-determination, and liberation and sovereignty for African people. Now, we had a conference this past weekend in D.C., one of the regional initiating committees of North America. We had brothers and sisters from Canada. We had brothers and in fact, Thomas Sankara's brother was in attendance. Thomas Sankara, of course, was a strong brother who they killed in Burkina Faso. You know, anybody who talks about uniting Africans, because that is the ultimate. That is the ultimate goal, is to unite Africans. In fact, do you remember when they had that T-shirt? I think it was Puff Daddy, "Vote or Die." I think that was it when Barack first ran. I think it was. I'm not sure.
It was 2004.
Oh, 2004. See, I knew somebody wouldn't do 2004. That was when what you call Bush. Bush won again. Yeah, you're right. Yep. And so obviously that didn't work, did it?
Nah, not at all.
Well, also, too, these elections sometimes are really staged. You know, I don't trust anything that this government does or says. You know, I trust nothing. But I think that what we need to do is revive that has a unite or die, unify or die.
The thing about that for me, people like Diddy and all of them, they're mere opportunists, and they don't have the political they don't have the acumen, the political acumen that they say they have.
No, they don't. You're right, they don't. You know,
they just want to take advantage of the moment. They want to take advantage of people going mm-hmm. on for their music.
Right.
Pretty much celebrity followers, and send them down this road. You know,
exactly.
If Diddy was really about, you know, politicizing and really organizing, he would have gone beyond that whole vote or die thing and looked at stuff more holistically. Like he's a mere opportunist, and you know, we don't really know. You know, as far as the whole voting thing, I'm a believer that politics is local and politics is more than voting. You know, so if you are going to be involved in it, we should move as a unit. But it shouldn't be our end-all, be-all at the same time. I think that we need to be involved in terms of just consolidating our power, right?
Right.
Moving outside the two-party system, really organizing among ourselves and demanding from the grassroots what it is that we want from elected officials, because they confuse us time and time again, just like you said, when they put these people in front of us and they're telling us to choose. But the thing is, though, there's a good few million of us in this country. Why is it that we only have two to choose from? It's because, like you said, they've been selected mm-hmm. for a long time. Even Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton backed down from seeing Obama in 2008 because they told her that come 2016, she would have a seat at the throne.
Right.
That's why she backed off. Matter of fact, Barack Obama gave her the Secretary of State position as a deal maker. You understand? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, listen, I don't want to see you anymore. You know, let me get the presidency. I'm going to give you a chance to be in my cabinet. And then from then on, you know, you can take down
right.
Libya. You can destabilize, you know, the Middle East or the northeastern end of Africa. That's what it's really called, right? Before you get the presidency. You know, so we as African people, we got to understand that we are a colony within a country. And if we organize politically with the word politics being used differently, then we can connect that to the economics and the other stuff. And I think that's what this weekend really spoke to. You know, just like you said, we said, like, there was a whole lot that we went through, you know, and I walked away from that event, you know, or that meeting of the minds, much more confident in our future, because, you know, there's just people out there who are really serious about organizing in the grassroots
yeah.
and really just connecting like-minded people with different abilities. It's not that everybody's going to stop doing their thing for the sake of the collective. It's that we're going to keep doing our thing with the collective in mind, understanding that, hey, this is the piece of the puzzle that I have to contribute toward a movement for sovereignty and unification.
Ashe. And that's why I walked away from that conference as well pretty confident, particularly meeting young people like you, Brother Imhotep, the other brother that he was with from Baltimore, the brother that had the California hat on, the Cali hat on. That young brother's sharp, too. I was really impressed with how serious-minded you young people are and how dedicated and committed to African people that you are. And so to me, that's the biggest thing I walked away with. I'm definitely down with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. I will definitely be in Accra when the call is made. I think it's supposed to be 2020, correct? If you remember, I think ultimately
December, from what I recall. I might be. I feel like at the end of this year, okay. Early December.
Oh, okay. Whenever it is, I'll put my little change together, and I'll definitely try to be there because I'm adamant about pushing our people and pushing this particular sovereignty agenda forward, because that's what it is. There shouldn't be anything about voting, representation here, there, whatever. The bottom line is everything should be geared towards educating our people and those who want to be. Because we're right, we're not going to get them all, but those who want to be. This is in the spirit of Marcus Mosiah Garvey. This is in the spirit of those of us who understood of Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, Dr. Sheikh Andre Diop. This is in that spirit for African people coming home and to return. We got a call, Brother Sam. We're going to take this call. 502, area code 502.
Brother Oshie, greetings to you and your guests as well as the audience. It's Sister Susani.
Sister, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Brother Oshie, I wanted to start off by saying really the so-called leaders, I think we're spending a lot of time on them, but I just don't think we can wake them up, as somebody said we needed to wake them up. The only people that we can really wake up are our own selves, personally, our own selves. And if enough of us do that, perhaps we can start moving forward. I am reminded of the book, African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, by our ancestor, one of the ancestors.
Yeah, Barry Shango. In fact, Barry Shango, Barry Shango and I share a birthday. So last month, in April, last month, I had a program dedicated to Dr. Barry Shango, and we talked about it, played a few of his clips and so forth. Definitely, I agree. Go ahead, my sister.
Yes, definitely. I think that book is excellent, and really, until we start with our own selves, by detaching our own ourselves personally from this monster, we are not going anywhere, mentally, physically, or economically. And, you know, the re-Africanization and the de-Whitenization that Dr. Radile Kambon talks about, I feel really resonates with the area that we often like to emphasize, because it's easy for us to look at those so-called leaders and anybody else who steps out, even amongst ourselves who are, you know, African-centered, maybe it's quick for us to look at who's not doing what they should be doing, when we really need to put the emphasis on ourselves, because that's where the change will start to happen. Well, and I think as long as we're loyal to these non-African religions, Christianity and the Orthodox Islam, our people are not going anywhere, Brother Oshie, because I'll tell you what, these religions are teaching them that they're not Africans or black.
Right.
I mean, they are more loyal to their religion.
Right. And see, than let me say this.
Themselves being black, they don't even see themselves as black people
or
African people.
Exactly. That's the serious problem. And even though Saru Seti is profane as he is, he hit on a piece on the Nation of Islam, not saying that they're African, you know. And when he threw that piece out there, and I, you know, had to deal with the literature and came back with some more information about it, I was like, whoa, you know, kind of gave me a different look of the Nation and Minister Farrakhan, because those were his own words. There are a lot of our people who don't want to be African. In fact, I did a program about black and the new black and all of these kind of entertainers and so forth. You know, their whole mindset, they don't want to be African. They want to be black. You know, Stephen A. Smith, Steve Harvey, you know, no, they don't want to be black. They don't want to be African. They want to be black. They love the capitalism. They may not necessarily want to move near Caucasian. They may, because like here in Atlanta, there's a lot of black people who live in areas that are immaculate, subdivisions, gated communities, cul-de-sacs, and so forth, and their nice homes, you know, manicured lawns. I'm quite sure inside is immaculate. But the bottom line is that that's the mentality that they have. Because just like in Dr. Jerome, what's the brother's name? Addicted to Black. Jerome Fox. Dr. Jerome Fox's book, Addicted to White. Addicted to White. And the subtitle is The Oppressed in the League with the Oppressor. You know, that we are so addicted to what these folks have done. And we, because we've been, number one, been beaten up with it. It is 24/7, 365. You are bombarded consistently with images and notions of your inferiority and given the fact of how great Caucasians are, that you want to be like them, that you want to have the same things they have. Even in this move of Black, they don't want to be Caucasian. They want the trappings of it. They want the materialism of it. They want the capitalism of it. But, you know, they want to be cool. They want to have their own style, you see. But it's show in the hell ain't us. It's not African. They could care less, you know.
So, right.
Go ahead.
And this one I'm going to mention, and it may, you know, not everybody's going to be pleased to hear me bring this one up, because I think as long as we celebrate these Eurasian European holidays, we are stuck with this monster and we are never going anywhere, because starting with just, you know, I mean, these ones, they're killing us mentally and otherwise.
And financially.
But economically,
yeah,
economically, we're finished. Because I'll tell you what, Brother Oshie, just this selfish celebration of birthdays, okay? Birthdays are alien celebrations to Africans. You know, I'm a little over 50, and, you know, I won't go too far with that, but I grew up in a household where we were not celebrating birthdays. Our parents then sent us to European schools where we found out about birthdays. And I still remember, you know, saying to Dad, you know, well, it was my birthday last week. And he would smile and say, well, maybe next year, you know, because the pressure was on for us to celebrate. And as long as we live in this country, some of these things we're going to have to individually say, is this really worth putting our families to continue celebrating selfish holidays like birthdays? Each individual, imagine how much money, Brother Oshie, has been spent. I suspect birthdays are draining our economics a lot more than Christmas, even. Because every individual in a family is celebrating every single year. And the pressure is on. Some of our families are breaking up because maybe the spouse didn't quite do the wife celebration, the kids expected something, everybody expected whatever it was. I think these birthdays, we need to look at these as part of our re-Africanizing and de-whitenizing, because these people will set up holidays. They will do anything to drain us financially. And then we cannot move forward. And birthdays, along with all these, you know, the Christmases and the Valentines and everything. But birthdays, I suspect, are probably doing more damage to us than anything else. And then before I go, Brother Oshie, if you don't mind, one more on gentrification. You know, gentrification is actually going on the African continent. In Botswana, where I grew up, there's a town, it's called Maung, M-A-U-N. It's in the northern part of Botswana, closer to Zimbabwe and Zambia. This town now, it used to be a village when I was growing up, made up of beautiful African people. Now, these monsters are invading it. They've got the white boers from South Africa and white Americans. Everybody's coming into this town and settling in and displacing black people, African people.
I'm quite sure they got a defense force to protect them. You know.
Well, not yet, but it's probably, well, the American force is there too, by the way. I mean, unfortunately, they're there, and who knows, maybe they're the ones. And I remember back in the 2000s, around 2005 or so, at work running into somebody who found out I was originally from Zambia, white Jewish man, who then was proud to announce to everybody his getaway vacation was to this town almost every other year. and never even went to any other part of just vacationing. And I thought, that's weird. Why would somebody do that? Until later on, you know, in the last few years, when my sister said, you know, you can barely recognize this town anymore because white people are invading it. So we need to really, if we're going to repatriate, Brother Oshie, those, and it's not going to be all of us.
No, it's
we
not.
We need to take this as an urgent situation, because I'll tell you what, they are displacing us everywhere and waiting for masses of African people and black people from the diaspora to move back to the continent. I don't think it's going to work, because I'll tell you why. I mean, for one thing, they destroy us as soon as they know we're fixing boats and ships and planes to take us away. We're going to have to do it the way they gentrify, one African family at a time. Re-educate those kids that we're bringing up, but just slowly invade some of the places like they do when they gentrify, and make it a long-term plan, you know, under the... But thank you very much. I'll get
always
off
my
of
sister.
This so I
thank
can
you.
Let other people...
All right, dear.
Thank you so much.
Always. Peace to you, my sister. Thank you for always listening and calling and contributing. Brother Sam, you heard my sister. What did you think?
Oh, yeah. I was listening intently. It's happening all around the world, man. I know they were talking about West Point, Liberia, where my mother's from. They're gentrifying that under the veil of development as well. West Point's along the coast, so it's facing the Atlantic Ocean, I believe, and it's receding. And you have people going through there right now, you know, doing their best to, you know, quote-unquote develop it. You know, there's some land rights issues, yeah. So the sister was right, you know, and as she was talking about what was happening in her home, in her home village, I couldn't help but think about my mother's homeland, you know, where she's from, and just what's happening out there as well. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Europeans, man. The Chinese, man.
It's the Chinese, man. You have Chinese marrying Ugandan women.
Yeah.
You know? You have Chinese are so huge in Africa, and then I seen a report about how Africans were treated in China, how disrespected they were treated in China when they're treated on African soil with, you know, with respect, you know,
exactly.
and their intent is not just to build something for us. Their intent is to make that part of who they and what they are in terms of land, in terms of resources, in terms of food production, and so forth and so on, you know? In fact, I venture to say, I look at it like these are the elite of China. They're going to rule China from Africa. And Africa will be the breadbasket for China. I mean, I'm sorry, Brother Sam, go ahead.
It's even got to a point now, the United States, it's either the CIA or the State Department, they were looking into, you know, allegations that the Chinese government was hurting his hand a little too much. So they look at that, and that's just, you know, just the gall of the U.S. to say, well, you guys can't extend your hand geopolitically like we should. We're about to stop you. Because even the United States, as they're falling, they're seeing these other countries, even the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, right? So
right.
Russia, the Indians, and the Chinese, they're in there as well. Like they know exactly what's going on. So Africans, they gotta, you know, and oftentimes, you know, in many cases, we go to whoever's feeding us at the time, or like lining our pockets instead of using our own resources. I know in Liberia right now, there's a question of how to restore the iron and ore industry, because Liberia has natural resources off the west coast of West Africa. Liberia, they found oil out there, but the oil funds or the funds generated from that haven't gone to the people. That's the issue right there. We have the resources,
right?
We have the human capital.
It's the same thing all over, son. All over Africa and all over, really, throughout the world. Is the multinationals, is that 1% of oligarchs who control pretty much 80% of the world's resources, and of course, consistently pushing oil and coal, which to me should be dead. That shouldn't even be a damn issue. What we should be pushing is, of course, solar and wind for energy, because you can do a multiplicity of things with that kind of energy, even cars, other industries and so forth, because we know that what has happened is that the planet's ecology has been messed with. It is messed up. And that's why you're going to see extreme weather patterns. When they talked about global warming back in the day, and of course the oil, because when Jimmy Carter was president before he got ousted by Ronald Reagan, he had put solar panels up on the roof of the White House. Well, the first thing that Ronald Reagan did was take them down and then co-opted the wind and solar industry. They co-opted it. The oil industry bought them out to crush them. And of course, big time oil happened. I mean, you were talking about across the globe and its connections with OPEC, its connections with other resources for oil. And then now when African countries like Ghana discovered oil, and of course Nigeria, you know, and of course Libya and so forth, these countries. But to me, oil should be something that is being phased out. Coal should be no longer even discussed. The bottom line, because those entities have done to some degree serious harm to the planet. So what we need to be talking about is the alternative energy sources that we can use. And that's why, as I envision Africa, there is no coal, there is no oil. What you have is solar energy. What you have is wind energy around the continent. And you have solid electrical grids. Because, I mean, you know, if you go to Ghana or some other African country, they always have blackouts. They always have problems with water. They always have all these infrastructural problems. So my contention is that when we get this together, we talk about a Pan-African Federalist Congress or movement, the bottom line is that what it means is that we are in control. African people are in control from the bottom to the top. And nobody, and I mean nobody, can tell us what we can do with our resources and our land. And if you want them, you'll get them at fair prices. No longer will you manipulate and undermine us. You'll get them at fair market value prices. Because it's a damn shame. I'm sitting in Ghana at this cocoa farm and all this raw material, all of it going to Europe. That's why you think that chocolate is Swiss chocolate, Cadbury's, Belgium, you know, England, Nestle's and so forth. We got another caller. We're going to take this call. Okay, Brother Sam?
Yes, sir.
602.
Yes, sir, Brother Oshie. This is Brother Marcus.
Brother Marcus, how you doing?
Yes, doing great. I'm doing great.
Brother Marcus, you're on with Brother Sam Collins. He's one of the young people at the Pan-African Conference this past weekend in D.C. that I'm seriously impressed with. He's a staunch Pan-Africanist in the spirit of Marcus Mosiah Garvey.
Yes, good greetings, Brother Sam. You know, Marcus Garvey name is more reverent to me than Jesus Christ. I tell you.
So
a lot of Negroes can't correspond that. I agree with you. We have to set up that economic link, though, because as I just said, you see, the problem in Africa is that they can't get their goods to market. You see, that's why those people over there pimping them, giving them little and nothing for their natural resources. If we, from this end, especially here in America, if we had an economic link with them in Africa, then we would be the ones marketing the goods and services coming out of Africa. You see, we had that joint venture with our people, said, okay, you know what? We will market the products here for you in out of Africa, and then we can get the market value, the fair market value for you. You see, because that is the problem they have on the continent. They don't have an out. They have these Arabs and Chinese and all these other people giving them little and nothing for their natural resources. So it is imperative that we make that economic bond. We make that economic bond with our people. You be our eyes and ears in Africa. We'll be your eyes and ears here in the U.S. because we have to, before we do anything, we have to have an economic base. We got to get the finance in order. And the only economic system right now is the capitalist system.
And that's
so
why
we have to use.
And see, Marcus, that's why I was at the conference as well, along with my good brother Baba Kambizi, because we're promoting us lifting us. We're promoting an economic model based on cooperative economics, based on a principle of Kwanzaa, Ujamaa, cooperative economics or family-centered economics, a collective where we pull our monies together to make things happen.
Exactly.
You know,
to make things happen. Yes. And whatever economic system we develop in Africa, we have to make sure that every African man, woman, and child is clothed, is fed, is housed, is protected,
yes.
Education. So whatever model we come up with in Africa, we have to make sure of that. But as the young brother said about China, you see, the reason why the African went and made deals with China is because we were there. You see, we undecided were there in Africa. So they're not going to lay down and die. They're
right.
Look, we got to make a deal with
right.
somebody.
Right.
So that's why they made that economic tie with China. You see, but we have to, you see, because I remember, brother, in the 1990s, we were moving to Namibia. When Namibia, just after South Africa got independence, Namibia got independence too. And we were having forums in Harlem. And we in the nationalists said, look, we're moving to Namibia. We're trying to get support in Namibia. 1 week, we would have a forum full. When the white folks are up in Harlem having the forum, the forum would be full. And we went up and said, look, okay, next week, the nationalists are going to be here. Brother Oshie, you could count the amount of people on your finger, you know? So our people are at fault, too. You see, when you tell them about Africa, they don't want to hear nothing
no.
about Africa, a lot of our people. So we're going to have to get behind our people and stick our foot deep up their behinds and look, you're going to move.
Well, see, the you thing see? Is this. The thing is this, brother Marcus, and of course, Brother Sam, and of course, Brother Sam being one of the young brothers who is going to be that kind of energy to make this happen. If you don't want to go, don't go. You know, we're interested in entertaining those brothers and sisters who understand that we must be a free and proud and independent people. We must be a sovereign people. Nobody outside of us should ever again tell us who and what we are and what we should do. We're calling on the spirit of our ancestors, those warrior spirits of our ancestors. We're educating ourselves to the idea of doing things for ourselves. We're getting individuals, men and women, who will get the mechanical skills to develop the infrastructure that is going to be necessary. And many of the brothers and sisters who are here who are not doing anything can go over there and get work as laborers to build
of
roads,
course.
To build infrastructure, water system. That's what we're talking about, Brother Marcus.
I agree with you, you know, but, you know, the thing too with us is that we have to be an example, especially we nationalists too, because our people, they move by inspiration also. Because, you know, sometimes you talk to them about this black stuff and all black, they say, well, what you doing? You know, I don't see that black stuff you're talking about making any progress. You ain't making no progress. So what we got to do, we got to become prosperous ourselves as nationalists. And then they go see, well, hold on, brother Oshie look like he's doing good, brother Oshie moving, doing big things. And then they're going to come to you and say, well, you know what to do? You say, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to show you how to do this, brother. We got a sister. We're going to show you how to be successful. And you know the jealousy and this thing in our people, they'll do it better than me and you. You see?
Right.
Because they're going to say, yeah, I'm going to show Brother Ocean how, you know, and they'll outdo me and you. So we have to be an inspiration to our people.
Right.
But it's going to come a point in this country, Brother Oshie, where a lot of these Negroes who don't want to go to Africa, they're going to be forced to make a move. Because this cracker, he ain't going to sit down and have them freeloaded on him either. He getting tired of them too. You see, so they don't want to go to Africa. They're going to want to swim to Africa at that point in the future. I guarantee you, Brother Oshie, because this economy is crumbling. and he can't even take care of his damn own people. Yeah. Do you think he's going to have these people? Look, some hunger pains going to hit our people. They're going to want to swim to Africa, my brother. So, all we have to do is keep on doing what we do.
That's right.
And we have to make that economic link with our people in Africa. We market your goods and services. You see, you talk about coffee. Cashew is another big money maker in Africa.
Yeah.
But again, we don't control it. It's the Indians over there who control it, them East Indians.
Right.
We got to break into that market and break into these markets.
Well,
this is war, as you say.
That's right. This is war. Right on, Brother Marcus.
All right, Brother Oshie. Thank you.
No, thank you, dear brother. Peace to you. Thank you. Thank you always for listening and calling. Brother Sam, what do you have to say?
Man, that brother touched on quite a lot. You know, as far as the whole economic piece, I think our only hurdle, and this is, you know, big or small, depending on who you are, but I think that we can overcome it, is just the whole corporatization, the mass corporatization that's pretty much blocking out our access to the means of production. You know, so if we are talking about moving economically and, you know, building up coffee shops, building up other resources, I think for us, it's about finding ways around the corporations to get the means to production, to get the supplies, the raw supplies that we need to make our own resources pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, I don't see anything else that would stop us from making a true economic base. And there are a lot of people who are already doing that. You know, it's just a matter of creating that network. I see you mentioned Let's Buy Black 365.
Yes.
Sister Taki Cambon,
yes.
I've worked with her a few times, and I like what she's doing in terms of just exposing us to the Africans here and abroad that are building up their own businesses. And it's about pretty much just circulating those dollars. You know, the more
right.
we circulate those dollars, the more we're cognizant of the money that we're spending, the more that we can all, you know, the better that we can build. And one more point that I want to make. It's not about being wealthy. It's not about having the biggest house or the biggest car. It's about living communally and sharing resources among one another. We have to get out of this Eurocentric mindset where there's somebody at the top and there are minions at the bottom.
Right.
If we, global African nation, are to succeed, we have to be of the mindset that we are living communally and we are sharing resources, we are bartering, and most of all, we are keeping in mind the economic and social welfare of our fellow woman and man.
Yeah, that's why Brother Baba Kimbizi made the presentation, and then towards the end he wanted to make that a statement, put that into the record, put that into what the Pan-African Federalist Congress is all about in terms of just what you said, being a collective, sharing the wealth. Imagine if Africans had that mindset at this very moment with the wealth that they have on the continent. Nobody would be poor. The land itself would be rich because the land is rich, you know. But I'm talking about how it looks instead of looking destitute and barren. I mean, the desert can be fought back. There's a lot of things that we could do to help change the climate and change the landscape and keep the migration patterns of animals. All of those things can be done if we put management on it. And we can do that when we come into our right minds, because the people are coming into Africa have no, you know, they definitely don't have no feeling for the people of Africa. They just want the land and resources, and they'll do whatever they have to do to get them. If it means killing us, exterminating us, eliminating us, they'll do it. They have no conscience. These people aren't moral. They have no, you know, none at all. We only have a few more minutes. I really appreciate this conversation. Wish it will be longer next time. If you are doing something, Brother Sam, Let's Talk DC. What is your program?
All Eyes on DC.
All Eyes on DC. I apologize. All Eyes on DC.
No problem, man. I say All Eyes on DC because DC, being the center of the U.S. government, is an intersection of local, national, and international politics and economics. This is the center of Babylon, and underneath all that are the people in search of self-determination. And I'll send you the info via text.
And then if there's anything that you want to talk about, you're always free to come on this program, give me a call. come on the program, announce particular things, or if I feel there's some subjects that I would like to talk to you about on the air with our listening audience, hopefully I'll have that opportunity with you in months to come, man. Because number one, we need your spirit. We need your enthusiasm and your willingness to work on behalf of our people. We are the ones who can instruct, but you are the ones that can implement, and we need that implementation to happen, and our people need to see that, you see. So I'm excited about the future of African people. I'm excited about this Pan-African Federalist movement here in North America. I was excited to meet the many people that I met this past weekend, although there weren't numbers. I ain't hung up on numbers. You know, I'm hung up on how dedicated and committed the people are. What is our direction? What are we planning to do? That's what I'm hung up on. So if you got any closing statement right now, Brother Sam?
Yes, I would just like for us to keep our eyes on the prize and just consolidate. And I would also like to see more synergy between the elder generation and the so-called millennials, you know, people my age and a little older and a little younger than me. And I also want to implore people my age to pull up the teenagers, because the teenagers are going through quite a lot. You know, there's so many influences outside of what they should be listening to and seeing. Their rites of passage is very poisonous. So there needs to be some sort of synergy between all different generations, so that we're passing along this ancestral knowledge and really counteracting the programming that is bringing down our people.
I agree. Oh, man. In fact, I love that closing mark you just made, son. I really do appreciate it, because I'm definitely down with the intergenerational piece for us. Because if we are to exist as a people, our elders, those who are in the middle of that, and those young people, we all need to be on the same page. And with the spirit of our ancestors to motivate, inspire, and guide us, there's no doubt that we shall win. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this opportunity. Be with us on Wednesday when we once again have African perspectives. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Thank you, my brothers and sisters.